Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is a Monday. Today is Monday, November 15th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and turn any negative emotional experiences I have into part of the infallible guidance system that every one of us has been gifted. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click it, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have either been stepped through the use of that tool or talked about the exceedingly positive benefits of employing that tool in their lives. And we hope people do that soon and often. All of those things, read that chapter of that book and check out the worksheet for yourself. And download the app for your phone, so wherever you are, even in the middle of the night, you can effortlessly get access to the app, because that frequently generates comments and questions. And if you've got any of those, give us a call at 563-999-3581, or you can send us an email, tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. You can also go to send Jeannie an email at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. We're also doing the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 319th day of the year. And the lesson today simply reads, I came for the salvation of the world. The commentary reads, "Here is a thought from which all arrogance has been removed and only truth remains." So this is not an egoic trip that someone's going on. It says, "For arrogance is in opposition of truth. But when there is no arrogance, the truth will come immediately and fill up the space that the ego left unoccupied by lies." So when the ego is not filling you full of lies, the truth steps in. Only the ego can be limited, and therefore it must seek for aims which are curtailed and limiting. The ego thinks that what one gains, another must totally lose. And yet, this is the will of the Creator, and I learn that what one gains is given to all. We are all connected, in other words. Creator, your will is total, and the goal which stems from it shares that totality. What aim except the salvation of the world could you have given your offspring? And what but this could be the will that my true self has shared and shares with you? So Pam Grout has a book titled The Course in Miracles Experiment, and her lesson 319 reads, is titled Anatomy of a Guilt Trip. She quotes Captain Jack Sparrow from the movies of Pirates of the Caribbean as saying, "The problem is not the problem. The problem is your attitude towards the problem." Pam writes, "My dysfunction of choice has always been guilt. Maybe you've been on the same hamster wheel, the one where you obsessively worry about all the things you could have, should have, why didn't I, etc. I wrongly believed that if I beat myself up, I would become a better person. If I listed my faults and came up with a plan to improve them, I would finally get the guy or get the financial situation or get the whatever you want, fill in the blank, that I so desired. What I finally came to realize is guilt and all of its mean girl cousins is a deterrent to miracles. Each question of why didn't I do this only made the wall between me and my highest good more impenetrable. As I began to dismantle each shaming thought to take my focus off the facts of my pitiful existence, a higher truth began trickling in. I am okay just the way I am. Every wrinkle on my 60-something face, every age spot, every time I felt wronged or angry or acted less than the perfect human being I aspired to be, that's all okay. Self-love isn't about getting a massage every other week or treating myself to a bubble bath, although they're nice gifts and are never discouraged. Self-love is about accepting myself exactly as I am, warts and all. Guilt is as foolhardy as any military strategic defense initiative. The only thing it deters is the always flowing stream of eternal good. So that's our Course in Miracles workbook lesson and our Course in Miracles experiment commentary from Pam Grout. And we have, as usual, about 50 minutes to explore your comments, your questions, your suggestions. 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can have a conversation. What's on your mind? What was keeping you occupied this weekend? How can we support you? What would be of benefit for you to have us step through? Whether it's a worksheet process or a question about the process, I had some time this morning, and I was listening to the book by Pema Chodron titled When Things Fall Apart. And Pema is she's a Buddhist, and she's talking about bodhicitta. And bodhicitta is that pure loving heart center. And I was just amazed the more I listened to how exactly like our true nature, that you're made of this stuff we call love, etc., that we talk about so often in the Mind Shifters support groups and here on Mind Shifter Radio. And she's describing the bodhicitta as that part of you that no matter what you've been through is this pure loving heart center, and it never gets chipped, faded, rusted, dented, broken in any way. It's always the same as it was at your inception, at your creation. And it's accessible in any moment. It's your true nature. It's the root of your being. And if you just step into its awareness, the full benefits of tapping into that become yours. They talk about a process of breathing in your own pain and the pain of anyone else on the in-breath, and on the out-breath, breathing out the love and the joy and the happiness. And it's essentially that kind of a modification of the two-prong approach that I discuss in this work, which is, on the one hand, I want to remember my true nature and focus on the miracle of life expressing through me as me in the moment, and whenever I can't do that, whenever something negative arises in my mind, I want to step into the use of a tool. I want to remember that that core of my being is solid, is shiny, is radiant, is as pure as it was when it was created. And when my mind or the ego part of my life force starts telling me something less than that, I want to take action to identify what is that off-the-mark process in my thoughts, and what I want to explore what one of the many tools that are available on the planet right now might do to benefit me, whether it's Ho'oponopono or the Sedona Release Method or Byron Katie's work or Michael Rice's worksheet process or the targeted journaling that he calls the Mind Shifter tool. I want to start exploring the benefits of applying those tools anytime my mind is showing me something that's less than love, less than my true nature, less than the radiant, loving nature of the bodhicitta, that effervescent core heart, loving heart space that we all have access to, that is our true nature. So, how do I become aware of that? What do I do when what's filling my mind is something other than the awareness of that true nature as love? Well, one exercise says I can simply start breathing in the pain of the world and breathing out the relief, the joy, the eternal love. And what they say is that when we step into doing this, what we experience is an ever-expanding capacity for tolerating the discomfort and an ever-expanding capacity for extending that loving energy. There's a story of a woman who was having a very painful, severe, chronic, or what you call fatal illness. And her suffering increased and increased and increased until at one point she just began to tap into the suffering of people all around the world, whether it was an infant that was abandoned or someone in a state of conflict because of a war in their country. And her compassion expanded exponentially beyond words at the height of her own personal suffering. That's an example of, as they talk about in this work, that's an example of the bodhicitta awakening in her. Her awareness in her true eternal nature and her expansive ability to contain the suffering and extend the loving energy. It's not something I can do with my conscious logical mind, but I could step into the use of a tool like breathing in the suffering and breathing out the joy, the healing, the love. So, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What has been your joy? What has been your struggle over the past few days? Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Tim. I've been reading this book about and possibly by, I'm going to go get it and see whether she's, yeah, she is. No, she isn't. No, wait a minute. I've got two books in front of me. The Woman Who Changed Her Brain, Barbara Arrowsmith Smith Young. I mentioned her, I think, more than once on the show, right? She's the woman who was born with tremendous disabilities and found a way to train her brain to be more normal. And she talks about education and our educational system and how we have been telling children with dyslexia, for instance, or learning disabilities, that that's the way they're wired and they're going to be that way for the rest of their life, and the best you can do is a good workaround. She says that's just not true and it's done a lot of damage. But she created a lot of exercises, sort of like worksheets or tools. She created them for herself and changed her brain. Now, I'm not far enough into the book to find out whether she actually tells what these exercises were, and I was wondering if you knew anything about her work or about her.
Can you say the name again? What's her name?
Sorry, Barbara Arrowsmith Young. Maybe you didn't mention her. Somebody else might have.
And it's Arrowsmith?
Arrow, like a bow and arrow. Arrowsmith, all one word, dash, Young.
Yes, this is not something that's been familiar to me, so.
Oh, okay. I thought it was. Sorry, Dr. Tim. I'm curious. I'll read more and maybe tell you more when I do.
She's got a school in Canada.
Yeah, she has
in actually, Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Where she works with kids with disabilities of all kinds, there's a YouTube TED Talk she gives, and she seems perfectly normal. When you read about her childhood, it's astounding that she has learned to train her brain into being able to understand text, put sentences. She couldn't even tell time. She couldn't make sense, for instance, of the small hand or the large hand of a clock and what relationship they had with one another and what they meant. But she had a ton of other things that she just couldn't do. And this book, I really shouldn't have called you about it because I thought you had mentioned it, and I apologize. The subtitle of the book is How I Left My Learning Disability Behind and Other Stories of Cognitive Transformation. You're talking about Pema Chodron, and all of the work is about transforming our mind. And so I figure what we're doing is we are rewiring our brains, however slowly. And it sounds as if she did this just to be able to function in a way that most took granted. But anyway, sorry, I kind of got you off the subject of Pema.
That's quite all right. It's always it's always nice to see or find out about a new resource, and I'll check into her.
Very interesting. Yeah,
it seems very much like the work of the gentleman who's got the Zing performance work out of England, where you do specific exercises twice a day to change or to stimulate the stem cell growth in your cerebellum. And as the cerebellum increases in its functioning, lots and lots of stuff gets easier and functions better in your life, not just your physical, you know, moving the body around or physical coordination, but everything about what your brain does that might use any kind of an automatic processing, whether it's riding a bike or throwing a ball or reading. And with the actual exercising, the brain capacity increases. So I will check into it. It might be another way to do certain exercises that improve the brain functioning.
And that's what we're trying to do anyway, but with upset and reactions and the way we see the world. But those are all probably just on a different plane. These guys are talking about changing physical things or manifesting abilities where they had none before. But we're all trying to do that. So I was very interested in how she did this, because I bet we're already doing it, but maybe we could be more efficient even. I should say I. Yeah. I did a still point breathing session with Michael Saturday, 2 days ago.
On Saturday?
And had a real, yeah.
How did
it go? There were very few of us on. For me, not well. For Tim Bingham, he found it very calming and good. I don't know whether it's resistance or it's just not my thing or whatever it is, but I was honest with Michael and said, this is very hard. I'm lying there on my back with my mouth open, thinking it's an effort to keep my mouth open. It's not natural, so I have to think about it, and we're supposed to shut off the brain. Well, I'm thinking about keeping my mouth open and realizing I want to swallow, so I swallow, and I know I'm not supposed to. I mean, this is a vehicle for discovering every piece of garbage in my system, right there, just trying to do that. So I told him all about it, and he said, well, considering your past and considering this and that and the other, maybe there's some resistance here and maybe there's a problem. And he gave me a wonderful mind shifter, which is I can peacefully and sweetly do still point breathing, even though I want to swallow and have post nasal drip and all kinds of other things. Well, that's a good mind shifter. But where was I going with this? I was connecting it up somewhere, but I lost my train of thought. Have you done still point breathing, Dr. Tim?
Yes, a number of times.
And it goes okay for you?
Yes, it's a wonderful tool for those of us who feel comfortable with it. It's the one tool that until coronavirus, Michael did not teach or make available for free because he was convinced that people had to be in his physical presence when they learn it because the tool is so powerful. What if something goes wrong? What if they tap into stuff they're not used to, et cetera? So now with the coronavirus restrictions and all of the changes he's making in his efforts to make a living in a different way, it's working. And so he can offer it online through the Zoom. And so, you know, that's an option for some people. But again, every one of us is going to have our own stuff that comes up that will, at one level or another, block us from making the growth, the change, the learning that we say we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you've got that happening is no different than dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of other people who've been through intensives at Heartland or wherever they were holding them. I remember attending several different events at Heartland, and we do the still point breathing work, and it was common for people to be wailing and screaming in pain and clenching their teeth and saying, I can't do this, and, you know, breathing erratically, and that was a common occurrence. So you're not alone saying, I'm experiencing that my body and my mind won't let me do this.
Well,
so it's
nice
a good
to
option to explore, like we were talking about a few times before recently, explore your resistance. And one good way to explore your resistance is with a mind shifter, the targeted journaling.
Right. Oh, there's a ton of stuff that comes up. It's all old garbage. Like he was telling one of the members how well she was breathing and how she'd made tremendous progress. And I'm lying there thinking, screw this. I wanted to say something nice about my breathing. I mean, come on. It's like I'm a little kid again competing with siblings. Oh, well, it was very sobering experience, to say the least. And my cat again.
Yeah, the question for you, as for all of us, is, can I see that happening in my mind, in my thought process, and be gentle with myself?
Mm-hmm.
Can I see it and just say, oh, look, there's the ego.
Yeah, big
oh,
time.
Look, there's the old stuff. Can I be gentle with myself as I notice that I'm not living up to the ideals that I have aspired to? Because if I can't be gentle with myself in that process, I can't move forward.
Right. Right. I was having
I'll be stuck there because it's literally the ego that is beating me up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's the ego that I say I hate, and I don't want. I want to be more magnanimous. I want to be more spiritually advanced, etc. I say all of that, and yet when I'm beating myself up, I'm letting the ego drive the bus.
It sure is. Well, it was very nice to have that mind shifter because I realized I can do just about anything on that mattress. I can do the best I can, and that's good enough, and whatever it is what it is. But the thought came to me that if you can't do this, there better be another way for you to get to enlightenment, because if there isn't, you're in bad trouble. Stuff like that.
Well, that's not being very gentle with yourself, is it?
No. No.
I'm very curious about the physiology. I read about still point and asked Michael some questions. One thing he says is if you're breathing through the mouth, your brain doesn't get as much oxygen, so you're not going to be thinking as much. And I thought, I don't know if I want to deprive my brain of oxygen. I think that sounds kind of scary, like brain cells are already blinking out all on their own. I don't want any more blinking out. I mean, there's just so many favorite miserable thoughts.
Right, you've really given those favorite miserable thoughts a workout.
I know. And so what did I do, though, Dr. Tim? I signed up for the next one, or I'm signing up for the next one. They do them once a month on Saturdays with follow-ups during the week, and he's actually switching the follow-ups to accommodate Tim and me. I have a conflict on Wednesday nights, and there are so few of us that he's sending around a notice asking if Tuesday night would be all right, which would be really good. So somehow I guess I'm in for the long haul. But it's funny, still point, Michael invented or discovered still point breathing, I thought, and yet I do find it on the internet, not under his name, just as a general thing that's sort of known. So do you know anything about that?
About whether or not he discovered it?
Yeah, and it's his thing. Early on at one point, he said, please don't share this information because this is like copyrighted material. Only he didn't say that. It was something else. And maybe what you just said is right, that he wants people to be supervised, sort of like using psychedelics. You should, if you're going to do it, you better do it under the supervision of someone who make sure you have good stuff and you have the right amount and you're attended to carefully throughout your trip. Maybe that's what he meant.
that's an interesting analogy. Yes, probably true. not to equate still point breathing with the ingesting of psychedelics, but yeah, it's probably true.
Mm-hmm. Well, evidently, it's very powerful if you do it right.
Well, you know, Michael's theory about it is that when you are doing it and you go into still point, you're clearing out a tremendous amount of energy in a very short period of time. That's his theory. And, of course, most of us are carrying all kinds of energies and traumas, and if we start clearing it out, without any good sense of how to experience it, move through it gently, being kind to ourselves, having good support, understanding that it's all going to be fine because it's just energy and it was in us and we were surviving, and as it moves out of us, we'll survive. So there's a lot of that, you know, many people who go into and through still point don't have these big traumatic reactions or the big ego fight with it. Many people who do the still point breathing through Michael or wherever they get it, they have a very gentle experience of energy moving and of insights or releases. And yet, there are times where people have, as I was just describing earlier, all kinds of wailing and gnashing of teeth in their efforts to engage that process. I should say, though, that every single time that I've, you know, been to Heartland and been through a still point breathing with somebody, every person that went through that wailing and gnashing of teeth came out on the other side smiling and laughing. So, you know, at least peaceful, if not, you know, joyful. So it's not this deeply traumatic thing that people subject themselves to. For the most part, mm-hmm. It's just a relaxing breathing session through the course of which one might release a tremendous amount of energy that hasn't been serving them well.
Well, I guess what you're saying overall is just watch what's happening and be open to the possibility that what I've been thinking about it could be totally wrong, and just be open to a new experience, whatever it is.
Well, so what is it you've been thinking about it?
I don't want to say on the radio show. You know, I have certain ways of judging things, and it's not helpful in some cases. Basically, I thought it might be pure bullshit. And so, you know, I'm fighting against my bullshitometer is up.
Okay, so in what way might it not be true?
Not good to breathe through your mouth. It dries out your throat. Not good to breathe through your mouth because your brain doesn't get enough oxygen. Not good to breathe through your mouth because, at least when I'm lying down, my mouth automatically is shut. And if I want my brain to turn off, I have to shut my mouth, let my mouth be shut. Otherwise, I'm concentrating on keeping it open. I should stick a piece of wood in there or something to keep it open, propped open. You know, all this, these rather cantankerous, irritated thoughts about how I can't do it, basically, and it's not good to do. If I could lie there and breathe through my nose and just be peaceful, that would be fantastic. And maybe that's what I'll end up doing, and Michael won't say I did a good job, so what? You know, I'm just dealing with all this ego crap, Dr. Tim. It's like I'm a little kid.
Okay, so the idea of it not being true is really just the idea that you have to do a certain procedure for it to be effective. Is that what you're rebelling against?
You have to do it right. You have to do it right.
Well, essentially, the still point breathing that I was introduced to is about as effortless, and there's as little doing it right as any technique or procedure could have.
And yet you have to breathe through your whole chest, belly, all the way down to the bottom of your torso. And that is something that we don't do. Quiet, Doctor. What's so funny?
Well,
about
come
it?
On. I'm just chuckling about the intensity with which you're making those statements and the extreme focus on all the way down to and just, you know, I would just encourage you to soften a little bit and say, if you did research on every major spiritual tradition, the vast majority of them are going to have breathing techniques as part of their tradition. Breathwork,
right,
breathing
true.
Techniques, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you don't like the one that Michael's got, try the Wim Hof breathing techniques. Try the 4-7-8 Andrew, just try that. Do that while you're laying there with your mind shifter stuff in the background or whatever. And watch what happens.
Yeah, I guess it's just that Michael has taught me so much and given us so much, and it's ongoing. It's changed our lives. So then we come up with this,
And I think, well, I got to get on board with this, but I'm not on board with it. And I think, what? Am I losing ground? Am I rejecting something really good? It reminds me of a woman, a trans woman who came to Heartland when Tim and I were there 2 years ago. Maybe it was three. And nothing went right for her. And she was so upset. And we tried to show her that we could connect with her and we're right there with her. But she had so much going on that she left the midweek. She packed up her car and just drove off. And I feel as if that's just what I'm doing. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Dr. Tim.
You're welcome. I have no idea what just happened, but you're welcome.
You listened. Yeah, big connection, yep. Michael's right there. He's right there. What am I doing? Okay, I don't need to waste radio show time on this. Squirrel.
All right, so someone else has raised their hand, and I will turn on the microphone since that's our commitment. Is this Magda?
Yes, indeed. Hi.
Welcome.
Hey,
long time
Magda.
No hear from you. How are you?
I know. Good. How about you guys? Really good? Fantastic?
Good.
Wonderful?
Good, except for this damn still point breathing thing.
Like a little fly that won't go away, right? Well, that's exactly what I'm calling about. I just want to share a little bit of information. And Susan, I heard you say many, many times in this conversation, I just want to do it right. I need to do it right in order to have the effects. It sounds like I'm summing that up. Would that be correct? Is that how your mind is thinking about it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I suggest that you actually did it right because it revealed, your session there revealed so much to you. About yourself, about how you get into competitiveness and you want the approval. I relate to this a lot, so I'm not pointing fingers that aren't also directed to me, but wanting the approval of Michael or Jeannie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you did good job. Yeah, and all of those things are wonderful issues to know about and work on in whatever marvelous ways you would like to, whether it be another still point, sorry, worksheets, mind shifters. It's just a wealth of goodies to dig into and might be what you need to dig into before you can allow yourself to actually release into the still point process and have a different kind of outcome. So that was one thing. I think you did it perfectly right for you at this time. Another thing I want to share is that when I lived in Asheville, I had already gone to some of Michael's things here in Heartland, and I had learned how to do still point. And so when I heard that someone in Asheville was doing still point breathing, I was very excited about that. Well, it was quite different. There was no education at all about the actually going into still point where your body stops breathing just for a little while. It just feels like doesn't need to breathe. And so I used to think that was real scary, but it's really quite lovely. And it's a matter of just responding to what your body is telling you. But this particular woman did not teach that. What she taught was to breathe through your mouth. I don't even know if she got into, to use the whole body breathing or what. I don't remember that part. What I do remember is that it brought up a lot of emotions for myself and many, many, many other people. And so there was a lot of screaming and yelling and crying. I don't know if there was any resolution. It seems to me, as I look back on it, that there was, that people were encouraged to get into their emotional junk and just kind of got stuck there, which I understand is one of the reasons Michael says, if you start crying, that's okay if you can cry and grieve at the same time. But if you're going to choose one or the other, choose the breathing, because that is what will take your being into still point. Well, there is one other thing I want to share with you. The first time I did still point, I was already in a very heart-centered space, and I need to get back. I want to get back to that. I'm not quite in that same space now. But I believe that because I was already very connected to my heart and the love that is source, when I did my still point, I had some very moving visuals that came up. And it turns out that as we shared later on, my visuals were the same as two other people in the group that we had met at the same hilltop and same activities had happened and so forth. And so there was quite a spiritual alignment there. However, now when I view still point, I just have quiet. And, I guess I went through a period where I had a lot of rushing scenes that I couldn't even, they weren't around long enough for me to be able to grasp them well enough to describe. They were just little burning images, blump, 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 into the next one. And now my most recent still point, it's really been just peaceful, calm, and joyful. So,
do you do still point on a regular basis, Magda?
I do not. No, I feel I have problems too with allowing my mouth to be open and get dry and all of that stuff. So I do not gravitate toward it. That's why I feel best when I have the guidance. I need to sign up for the next one, I believe. We missed this one. Yeah. So anyhow.
Michael talks about doing it when he's walking, and I've been doing it when I walk for a long time. I mean, he said that ages ago.
Yeah.
But I just picture it as being deep breathing through the mouth. But when I'm walking, the mouth thing isn't so much of a problem. I don't know why. Maybe just a lot of things are flowing easily. I'd like to think that the same benefits are available there that they are lying down. Anyway, I don't need to even talk about all this because there are lots of worksheets that need to be done over this. It's just like a glimpse back into my childhood with my siblings and wanting to be the best one or at least good enough.
You know. Yeah, which is
and
great.
That's not new for humanity.
That's great knowledge for you. And so I congratulate you. And I also want to cheer you on once again for your absolute honesty. I so prize that in your conversations with Dr. Kim because you present quite a wonderful model for myself and perhaps other people.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's really nice of you to say.
Well,
yeah.
Nice
well,
to you.
Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it for me, and I'll just listen to you guys.
Thanks, Magda.
You're welcome. Thank you for being there.
Thank you, Magda. And I agree with what you're saying, that this is a very useful endeavor for Susan, even though she struggles with it. It's a lot of good stuff to become aware of. And as we talk about here so often, if I'm not aware of it, I can't change it. I can't work with it.
Mhm. So true.
So this, you know, the willingness to get engaged in this process, to sit on that Zoom call, to be honest about how it is or isn't working for you, all of these are the steps that demonstrate your willingness that is so important to, you know, growing, getting movement.
Yes, and I would add that probably if you, when or if you report during the sharing time, you know, that just wasn't very good for me. I had this and this and this going on, and I don't like it at all, whatever it is, that other people will, it will provide the key for others to be as honest with themselves and perhaps with the whole group. So that's great. I urge you to continue. Yeah.
Anything else?
Good, thanks.
No, that's it. Have a happy day, you guys.
All right. Thanks, Magda. Thanks for the input.
Thanks, Magda.
Blessings. Yeah. So, Susan, you know, that's a wonderful potential for you to reframe, you know, because you've labeled it as a failure, and yet the actuality of it is it's a tremendous success to become aware, even though you say, but this is nothing new, this is what I've always done with my siblings. It's an awareness you're having in the present moment, and that means it's up for you in that moment, and so you can take an action to deal with it differently. You can get a new learning from it. You can be working on it either at a different level or within a different context.
Right. Well, even just having that mind shifter has shifted something already. Because the next time I lie down there, I'm going to say, okay, anything goes. I'm just going to lie here. Follow the instructions as best I can, but be peaceful about it, whatever it is. That's just like getting permission to do whatever happens, fail or succeed. It sort of takes failure and success off the table.
Yeah, and that was in the instructions originally. And if you didn't follow those instructions, it just means there's something that's up in your energy system for you to become aware of. So if you go to do this again, and you get yourself ready and you start participating again, and you don't get to stay calm and you don't get to stay open and accepting, then just make notes of whatever the arguments are and use the tools again to dismantle the arguments or the negative self-judgments.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, even as you talk, other ideas are coming to mind about what's going on, like Michael's focus on us. And there were only Tim Bingham, Susan Bingham, and one other person. I guess it's okay. It was Roma all the way from Hawaii. Just the three of us. And I'm thinking, this man is giving us his undivided attention. And Jeannie's right there too, ready to not only give us her attention, but do whatever Michael needs to get information down on the computer and sent out to us or whatever. It's a lot to accept. It's a lot to, I can't think of another word, just accept.
Seems to you that it's a lot to accept. How? How does it seem to you to be a lot to accept?
The generosity, the giving of themselves to us.
Okay, so there's a part of you that feels like you're not worthy of it?
Well, it gets embarrassing after a while. I mean, yeah, I guess so.
Well, how could it be embarrassing if you felt worthy of it?
True.
It couldn't feel embarrassing if you felt worthy.
Hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So there's another little tweak, and you could turn that into another mind shifter.
Mm-hmm.
It's safe and healing for me to understand and to live from the realization that I am worthy of every gift that enters my life.
Okay.
I'm worthy of every gift and every blessing that could possibly come into my life.
Yeah.
What was that okay for?
Yeah.
Does that feel not exactly true? Is that what you're trying to say?
No. I understand it to be true. I also understand that I am being given gifts every moment. Like I'm looking out the window, just my eyes fall on a bright red tree in front of a bright green, yellow, orange combination tree that's getting ready to turn the rest of itself into one color and then drop leaves. I mean, the lessons and miracles have been about that, how everything is a gift to me and whatever I give anyone else is given to me. And so I have to just remember that Michael's giving to himself. It's just all right to accept all that. And it's actually it's a matter of grace to be able to accept all that and just accept it. I love it when other people accept something I give them. Even just a compliment. If they say thank you, that means a lot to me. That's a wonderful thing to say instead of fighting it off with, oh, no, but I did it this wrong and I did that wrong and I do that. I don't like doing that. Okay, my brain's just sort of popping with realizations, Dr. Tim. So anyway.
All right. That's a good thing. Especially if you decide to use it to your advantage.
All right. Yeah.
Well, congratulations on your willingness to engage the tools and for your brain popping. And I thank you for the calls, helping us fill the hour. And I'll look forward to the next time we get to talk.
Thanks, Dr. Tim, as always.
Right. You're entirely welcome and deserving. Blessings. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I appreciate you and your input and your great teaching.
Well, you're entirely welcome and deserving. Have a lovely show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Monday, November the 15th, 2021. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1. That puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to get dialed in, Susan, I'm going to turn your microphone back on. And just want to add in to what Monica said and what Dr. Tim said. And that is, you know, there is no doing it wrong. When you're breathing, the breath knows what to move. And, you know, I would offer maybe you're trying too hard instead of just allowing the breath to do it and letting go of doing it perfect, letting go of, oh, this isn't the way they want it to be done or whatever. And just breathe, and the breath takes care of everything. And I've had so many different experiences with still point breathing. You know, sometimes it's, you know, like a whole story. And then other times it's like Magda said, it's just total quiet and peace. And sometimes I don't realize I've stopped breathing until I take that next breath. It's like, you know, totally unaware of it. And then sometimes I felt like I've gone through a breath session and never really went into still point. And that's okay too, because the breath is what moves. And just trusting that. And I appreciate your willingness. I appreciate your support. You're staying with it. And, you know, you're awesome being on our support team. And we are so appreciative of you.
Thank you so much, Deanie.
Yeah.
Well, you guys pour yourselves out for us. And you gave us this wonderful session the other day. And it's just going to go better next time. And I don't mean it's right or wrong, but that it's just going to go better. I'm just going to melt into it and not fight it so much. I don't know what the heck I'm doing fighting it.
Yeah. And, you know, that possibly is that unconsciously you know that something is going to come up if you totally let go. And so, you know, it's not a conscious thing that, oh, I'm not going to relax into it. I'm not going to let that happen. But, you know, we do that. And, you know, the body has a memory. And so it might be a body thing that comes up. You know, I've had some breath sessions and it's like challenging to lay still because it's like, you know, maybe my hips hurt or my legs are nervous or, you know, get this jerkiness or whatever. And there's some people that actually when they're doing a breath session that they're, you know, they start wiggling and moving and turning and twisting and we'll instruct them, you know, to take a breath and to lie still and take the breath to, you know, if it's the legs, you know, or the hips or whatever, take the breath into that part of the body and let it go. Because then when we start wiggling and stuff, then that will keep the energy from moving where it wants to move. It's kind of like locking it in. And so it's, you know, sometimes I've had experiences of it's just an all-body experience. And then other times it's been, you know, the going to that deep place. And probably, you know, I've been with Michael since 2003. And, you know, sometimes it's just totally different. It's there's no breath session that I've had that's the same. And just being with it, you know, and probably even though I've been doing this work since 2003, probably just in the last two or three years, or maybe even just in the since we've been kind of locked in with COVID and Michael and I've been doing a lot of work with each other, probably the best breath sessions and the best realizations have come within this last year and a half.
I know Michael said something similar. He said, even after all this 40 years or 50 years of doing the work, he's having more ahas and realizations and more growing in the last year and a half.
Yeah.
That's both a challenge to hear and encouraging.
Yeah, so like, you know, the other is paving the way for the big.
Yeah.
Is how I look
one
at
of
it.
The...
You know, if... Go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to say, one of the things that I've seen the last year and a half, 2 years, is for me, aside from the new depth of personal work, is a whole new level of understanding, or maybe it's not even understanding, of the ability to, you know, in the still point session we did on Saturday, I talked about truth being what is in the actuality and allowing it to come in and restructure you, reform you. And so for me, my comprehension of the actuality of what's truly going on as opposed to my belief systems that, you know, were formulated from genes and experience and all of that, the last year and a half has been monumental in being instructed on that, receiving instruction on it, and grasping it, if it's even accurate language for it.
Grasping actuality?
Yes. Feeling like I've had, in the last year and a half, a deeper insight into the actuality of the created world rather than my perceptual constructs. I've been able to advance my ability to collapse my perceptual constructs on a deeper level and be with what is. That's kind of how I would express it anyway, though there aren't really words to accurately describe it.
No, but that's fantastic that you could do that. To be with that and have no reactions, nothing's triggering you. You're just observing it, right?
Observing it and let me give you an example. And I think you were on the show when I talked about it when it first happened. This goes back, I don't know, maybe a year ago. And I was dealing with the idea of genetic cleaning up of generational patterns. And, I mean, I literally, beyond anything that my mind could conceive of, I literally was shown an uncountable, unfathomable number of people in my bloodline and shown that each of them was a light. It was like, I mean, I literally was looking. It was like my eyes were pointed downward. My eyes were closed. I'm breathing. And in looking downward, I can see this uncountable number of lights. And those lights were just specks in the mass of darkness. And having a comprehension of the amount of suffering that was there and being instructed on how to, or even if it's a how to, but really being able to breathe and open myself to embrace that generational suffering and, you know, let it pass through me, let it be transmuted through me. And I think it, and part of that, what I comprehended out of that, you know, when they talk about Yeshua in the Garden of Gethsemane, and they say, you know, he took on the suffering of the world. I don't think he took on the suffering of the world. He chose to be the space of active love and process the energy of suffering at that level. And so for me, it was like, okay, so I can join him in doing that. We can each become individuals who choose to, and it's not even like, you know, it's hard to even put into words. We haven't got this in common experience, so aren't really words. So I'll use approximate words, but to really be able to invite those people to yield up their suffering and grasp it, hold it, comprehend it. I don't even know what words to use, and let the energy of that pass through me, to hold a space of love for that to pass through me. And that was like, just, you know, I've talked for years about changing genes and genetic. It was a vision. It was definitely a vision. And it's opened me to a new level of being the space to be able to process those things. You know, our definition of processing being the ability to hold love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up, rather than what my old pattern was to get stuck in it and lost it. Oh, all this pain, all this suffering, oh my God, oh, this is so terrible. That was my past, to make it personal, to make it mine, and to get stuck in it, to, you know, let it move from, okay, here's an energy, and move into a perceptual construct that became mine and about me, to not needing to do that, but just to be with that energy and not have to figure out what it was about, but just be the space for it. And there's one example, at least the best way I can explain it. And I think, and it fits to me at this point, the thought that Paul spoke about. He says, you know, whether in or out of the body, I knew not, for I saw things which I could not utter. And I'm trying to utter things that I don't really have words for. I'm approximating, I'm talking around it, but, you know, but I'd say that's one of the delineation points, was instead of having to construct it out of my BS, my belief system, my past, my history, was just to literally, and there was a piece of it, as I think about it, because I'm going back now more and more and kind of remembering it, and what I had to do physiologically to do it. There was a physiological process involved, and I'm kind of tapping into that right now of noticing the tensions in my body that held on to that. And really allowing my breath to go through, like right now, I can feel this tension in my hands as I pay attention, and you know, speaking, so it's not as attentive as I would be if I were just breathing, but to just let that tension go in my hands, to let the tension go in my chest, in my gut, in my legs, in my buttocks, literally letting that go to just uncover and be with what's beneath it, rather than, and it seems that if I hold my breath, if I tighten into it, then I can turn it into a construct, something in my mind. And, oh, you know, now I've got this to deal with. But moving to a different place of softening and opening on a physiological level to allow that energy to move.
When did this happen, Michael? Recently, you said, right?
That was probably sometime, I'm not even sure, sometime in the last, and I actually talked about it on the show the day that it happened. It's within the last year. Less than a year, I think.
I think I remember.
Something that's happened.
Mm.
But what's so present for me, and as I'm being present to it, it's my understanding of it or my grasp of it's expanding. If the starting point was the visual, to just see that darkness and those specks of light in it, and now moving into, I'm purposely, consciously breathing in and softening on a tissue level to grasp it in a new way, to hold the energy, to hold the space for it in still a different way than I did back then.
So you're using this as your meditation ongoing, by the sound.
I haven't particularly thought about that. I mean, from time to time I do. I haven't particularly thought about it in a while, but in this conversation that was an example that came up, and I'm really seeing that I do need to spend more time with it. Jeannie and I did a still point session the night before last, and touched into some early childhood things, like 2.5, 3 years of age. And I can see that in that space, it would be beneficial to remember, to reconnect with that experience and be with it on still another level. Instead of turning it into something that becomes my construct, my pain, my trauma, and or my deficiency, or my weakness, or my hatred, or my fear, or suffering, whatever. And you know, I can go back. Actually, when I was working on the book you've heard me talk about, that is now called "The 11 Most Important Words Ever Spoken," and or at least that was what it was called originally. And as I was working on that book, I had a memory surface when I was about 5. I think I was about 5. And, I mean, I'm working on this book, and I do a still point session, and the memory that comes up, when I was around the age of 5, my bedroom was right across from the bathroom in our house. I could see the bathroom door from my bedroom. And what I realized, and this would be more a perceptual construct that I had to process through compared to what I'm understanding and doing with it now, but the thing that changed the title of that book, because it really is an instruction on ending suffering, was that I'm breathing away and I touch into being about 5 and I've got an asthma attack going on. I mean, that was the story of my life until I was 25. And I've got an asthma attack going on, and I need to use the bathroom, but I don't have enough breath in me to even get out of the bed to move the 15 or 20 feet that I would have had to move to get to the bathroom. And I realized at five the level of suffering that was for me.
Wow.
And that's what changed the title of that book. Up till then, the working title of that book was, you know, the 11 most important words ever spoken, where Yeshua gives the protocol for being a human. And then it explains it as a protocol. You know, you must have rachman when you think of the creator, neighbor, in order to maintain self. And then he says, upon this hangs the law and all its prophets. I guess it's nine words. And you look at, you know, what he's saying is, you know, their question is, what's most important to human life? He explains not to love your neighbor, love God as yourself. He explains that you've got to have rachma in your mind when you think of the creator, when you think of neighbor. And by doing so, you maintain awareness of self, the truth of who you are. The gateway for human life to show up in your form is open. And then he explains why that's so important. For upon this hangs everything. It's like if let's say somebody has a medical problem, they find a doctor that specializes in that medical problem and has a protocol. Here's the protocol. First you do this, then you do this, you do this, here's what it takes. And you go to that doctor and you pay his consultation fee and he gives you the program and gives you all the stuff you need. And you go and say, hell with it, I'm not going to do that. That's too much work. Well, the result, you know, it's the protocol. It comes before the result. And what Yeshua is saying there is, this is the protocol to being human. And, you know, for 2,000 years, people have been running around trying, oh, I'm going to love my neighbor. I need to love my neighbor. Oh, boy, do I need to love my neighbor. And you know, for people with hostility and fear, that's totally, completely, 1,000% impossible to love your neighbor. I mean, there are all kinds of scams and conversations about it. But the truth is, if I have some kind of rage or fear or hatred in me, I set up a field. I'm going to have someone, a neighbor, who's going to show up and bring that up. And when I'm in denial and dissociation, I project that rage into my brain's image of them. Rage is just taking over my mind. There's not going to be love of neighbor. And he's saying, which means I lose my human life. If I'm not functioning as love in the presence of anyone, I've lost my human life. So that's what he's saying. Upon this hangs the law and all. Everything you read, like, don't even pick the book up until you get that one, because that's the protocol. That's the protocol to how to read the scriptures and understand them sanely. Otherwise, everything that people read, I mean, why have we got 32,000 different sects of Christianity? Everybody who hasn't understood or applied that protocol, they think they're reading the book, but what they're reading is what the book stimulates in their minds, and they make up stories and theologies based on what's going on in their minds. And most of it's projection, because the protocol isn't there. The precursor to all of it, to human life, having love present, isn't there. First order of business.
When I
talk about, have that memory of being five and remembering that suffering, that's where pain in my structure came up and was turned into a perceptual construct, you know, and that experience, I mean, that was actually just before I met Jeannie, so it's 18 years ago. And now I've been able to allow generational suffering like light years beyond that was like minuscule. And instead of turning it into something perceptual, to just be with it, soften in the presence of it, breathe through it, and transmute it. Bring healing to it. Bring love into the presence of love, allowing that energy to move. And that's where the healing process occurs.
And are you experiencing those points of light as just your ancestry as a huge presence, or are there individuals presenting themselves?
There were no individual personalities presenting themselves, but what I understood is literally, as I'm breathing, I turn my eyes downward, and I can see this enormous black space and spots of light. And what I understood was these are ancestors still lost and holding in darkness.
Wow.
And that I could literally breathe and invite that energy to move through me, to be transmuted through me, you know, in essence holding the space for that energy to be healed. You know, and you'll recall that, you know, 30-some years ago, I've told this story many times, as I was looking for what's the key? Why does one person heal in the same room as someone else doesn't? Why does a woman who has a 12-year issue of blood out of this whole throng, why is one person experience healing and the rest of the throng didn't? And what causes that healing? And so what became clear to me is two things are required for healing to occur. Love has to be conscious, active, and present. That which is less than love and held in genes or in mind, body, has to be allowed to surface. When it surfaces, then there's this transmutation. And the transmutation I'm comprehending right now, the transmutation takes longer if I turn it into a construct in my mind, a perceptual construct, as opposed to bypassing that altogether and just allowing the energy to be there and to move. And when active love meets that which is less than love, that which is less than love dissolves. Diseases disappear.
Wow.
But if I turn them into something personal, then there's another level of work I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if I went back to that 5-year-old experience, I had worksheets. I had a lot of work to do around that. I did a lot of work around that when that opened up.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back to this event in the recent past with unfathomable, I mean, it was like, it would have been easy to just go into full weeping over it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't that I needed to do worksheets on it. I didn't need to forgive it. I just needed to open and let the energy move through me. Let it process, rather than identifying with it, latching onto it, making it mine or about me, or, you know, claiming it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the forgiveness process allows us to unclaim it.
And so is that where the breathing comes in? That's where the allowing comes in?
Exactly. You know, remember that breath is Rukha. What's Rukha Dikuncha? The feminine elemental force in us that undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. We have free will. That's not going to be interfered with. But if I'm inviting, and to me, you know, when we breathe, it's about inviting Rukha to move, then it doesn't matter if it was a genetic thing from 20 generations ago. That elemental force has the power in us to undo those energetic patterns. And then
so hopeful.
Explain the truth to us. Explain the truth to us. Oh, this is how it works. So there's, you know, you've heard me say many times, you know, there are no teachers out here that have any value whatsoever. They can guide us back in, but the real teachers, that one in us, that's Rukha Dikuncha. It's all about connecting that. Go back to Yeshua, and Yeshua says in the scriptures, you can deny me, but don't deny this one I've come to connect you with.
Nice.
Because there's the teacher, and it's in the breath.
That is so hopeful, because we don't have to know particulars. We don't have to know a million gazillion individual people and their suffering. It can all get, it's like a chemical reaction or something. You add the element that's needed and it just dissolves it. Is that
what happens? We don't have to figure it out. That's it. Notice the non-being mind. Our number one pseudo-solution, the codependence intensive. What is it? I have to figure this out. There's no figuring it out. Power in us much bigger than what our pea brains will ever comprehend. And we can invite and turn it over to that power instead of, well, I need to know every little piece and nook and cranny and bolt and nut, and I have to fix it all. No, I don't. I mean, not even conceivable to do.
All right.
But there's a power there if we'll trust, if we'll open to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just for information's sake, and it's, I appreciate you continuing this conversation inquiry, because I'm, as we're speaking, really consciously, purposely opening more and more to that experience and letting the energy move. You know, I'm literally focusing on different parts of my body, going, oh, there's some tension. Oh, just let my wrist go. Just let my hands go. Just, you know, so just like keep it moving. And to the degree that we're willing to open to it, it moves.
Have you, maybe this is the wrong thing to do now, but have you written this down or recorded it in any way?
I've got a few notes that I made on it, yes. I did make some notes, but I haven't done any writing beyond that with it.
Wow. Well, what you told me helps me understand about this still point breathing I was fighting you on so much this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of just let things be. That mind shifter helped a lot too, just to say, I can sweetly breathe and swallow and have nasal drip, and so what?
And so what? Exactly. The energy, Rukka can do the work anyway. The breath will do its work anyway.
That's a good thought.
Yeah, and I can let go of the need to put my mind in front of it and try to control it or fix it or figure it out or make it happen or whatever. I can just let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
No need to figure it out. And then turn into the practice, you know. I mean, also really something that's become a daily practice for me now in the morning is breathing. And really, you know, I've talked about cultivating a relationship with love and really allowing my structure to feel that, to be with that, to physiologically feel that presence. And more I'm experiencing it as an energy moving in my so-called body. And enjoying it. It's just sweet.
You talked about
the presence of sweetness.
Nice. You talked about doing still point breathing when you walk. Is it any different?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily go into a full point still point breathing session when I'm walking, but if I'm walking or doing anything and I notice some tension, some restriction, some pain, I can open my breath on another level rather than do the opposite and try to restrict it. I can open it and embrace the energy and let it move.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I wouldn't go into a full still point breathing session while walking, but I can certainly use the still point breath to just, if I notice tension somewhere, to keep the energy moving. So breathing with you.
Yeah.
And you know, it's another thought that comes is, in order to fully open to the breath, and I guess this is becomes a trust issue, I've got to trust enough to let go, to let loose of control. Like, if I don't control this, then, you know, something's going to go wrong. But to let that kind of thought go and trust that this breath knows where it's taking me and where it goes. And, you know, I mean, I've just over the years worked with and breathed so many people with, I mean, anything you've heard on this show over the years, you know, any kind of trauma that somebody's called in with, and whatever it is, I've watched people who've come, you know, into the space in that tightness and that full-blown trauma and watch the breath resolve it. It's just, it will resolve anything. Not if we're going to hold on and try to control it and go, well, I'll run this process. And there comes a point also when you do let go of the breath that the breath, and this is a really sweet space, the breath breathes you. You're not breathing anymore. The breath takes over and breathes you. And that's another level of sweetness. And right now with, you know, the way you've been, I keep drawing my attention back to my structure. I mean, the energy for me right now that's moving in my arms and my chest is just monumental. So thank you for that, guiding that process with your questions and your thoughts.
You did it. Wow.
That's awesome.
I want to be open to all that.
You might want to go back in the Course in Miracles and read the section on the development of trust.
Okay.
That might be useful and helpful.
Is that a title of part of the text?
Yeah, it's a title. That's a title of a section. I don't remember exactly where it is, but there's a section on the development of trust.
Okay, I can look it up. Mm-hmm. That's a big one.
That is a big one for sure.
Michael, my daughter's ex-husband has a great need to read your book, says me. And I have been having fantasies of how to get it to him anonymously without him having to trace it, being able to trace it back to me. The man has been dating different women, and each relationship crashes in the same way over and over and over again. Because he falls in love with them, or he wants to be with them, and then he blows up at them and they leave. Or he throws them out because he gets so mad at them that he can't tolerate their presence. And it has happened so many times, and yet because it keeps happening, he has gotten thinner and thinner. He has he needs another neck operation, and it's coming up in December. He's got terrible neck pain. Talk about pain in the neck. I mean, that's a phrase that comes down my bloodline. And here's my son-in-law, ex, having pain in the neck. I mean, it doesn't
through
the bloodline zigzag.
Yeah, my take is he's never been angry with any of these women, but he's experiencing the physiological effects of his own rage.
Yeah.
The development trust is in the teacher's manual.
Oh, okay.
First, they must go through what might be called a period of undoing. This need not be painful, but it is usually so experienced. It seems as if things are being taken away, and it is rarely understood initially that their lack of value is merely being recognized. So someone who is locked into their goals and not willing to cancel a goal for anything is going to experience exactly what you're describing your son-in-law experiencing, tremendous trauma. Because
over and over and over again.
If he thinks, well, my life, my happiness, my whatever depends on having this, then there's a goal that just keeps the process going. So it's a powerful section.
Okay, thanks. I'll look it up.
Sweet. Any other thoughts for you?
Oh, I don't think so, although, you know, wait a second and there might come one. But no, go on ahead with your program. That's great. I have enough to chew on. I'll be listening.
Well, I join you in gnawing on the bones.
That's what's happening, yeah. A lot of gnawing.
I understand. I hear you loud and clear. Been gnawing for a long time. And, you know, if we gnaw without tools, it's crazy making. If we have the tools and we start gnawing on something, you say, oh, yeah, well, instead of me, you know, wrestling with this in my mind, what if I cancel the goal and let this energy process? What if I turn it over to Rukka and I trust? Things move on a whole other level. So.
Good to remember.
Very cool. Yep. Yep, for sure. And just a thought that comes, the inclination comes to share with you the thought that, you know, for the, 3 years or so you've been doing the show, doing your work, communicating with what's going on, is I listen to the things that you and Kim are doing. And then I listen to your judgments that you put on yourself. And I would invite you to step into a space in trusting in your own goodness. I mean, I hear how you care for people. I hear how you support people. I hear what you're doing with refugees and children and, you know, time to trust in your, to accept and trust in your own goodness rather than being stuck in the power person messages that were delivered to you that are invalid.
That's good. That's good advice. I know just what you're talking about. Just let things go now. It is.
Yeah,
even,
call it other stuff. It's just stuff.
It's curious
trust
to me.
Trust in your goodness.
Why is it? I mean, I could tell you that I had a wonderful childhood, lots of great opportunities. We were well cared for. Why is it that the few times where there was violence and power person was in action, why does that stick in there so hard when so much else was so right? I mean, I'm alive. I'm thriving. It's got to have been really good for most of it. What is it about human nature that holds on to that old story?
I don't think it's so much human nature holding on to an old story. Remember, we are energetic beings, and the amplitude of an energy is what counts. So, you know, if there are 100 wonderful singing voices in the neighborhood that are singing at a whisper level, and somebody's screaming and raging, which voice are you going to hear?
The
forgiveness process allows you to literally each time, you know, when they said to Yeshua, how many of these worksheets do we need to do? How many times do we need to forgive anyway? And they ask him, is 7 times enough? And he says, no. In Aramaic, he says 77 times 70. And what he's saying is, this voice of trauma or pain in you is so loud that you may have to shave and shave and shave and shave a piece off 1,000 times before it reaches the intensity or the amplitude of all of the other voices.
That is such an amazing way to put it.
Deleting it altogether. And each time you forgive, it's like you weaken that which you've applied forgiveness to as an energy pattern within your structure. And, you know, the child who's in the space of tenderness and not perceiving as we perceive as adults, it's easy for that child to misperceive. That's one of the reasons why, you know, the adult really needs to be on guard that they're functioning as love, and they, you know, refuse to slip into hostility and fear. But because the child can take just one little incident and perceive it, you know, if there's a particular type of suffering in their genes, and this event happens and it resonates within their genes, one little slip that the adult thinks, oh, that's meaningless, can become a whole life trauma for that child. Right up into adulthood, because they're not perceiving what happened. You know, here's somebody who's now 30. They're not perceiving what the 2-year-old experienced happening. As a 30-year-old, they're experiencing what the 2-year-old experienced. And what the 2-year-old, what that experience resonated in the child of 2. And it can be monstrous. And to me, that's one of the reasons why we want to be so on guard with children and keep opening the space for those trauma energies to open and be processed, even if we need to look at something bigger in ourselves. And, you know, if you think of the proper interpretation of the kingdom of heaven is the kingdom of expansion, is to keep that child opening and expanding into greater and greater spaces rather than with some form of hostility or fear, close them down on it, shut them down. But to keep opening the space, it's so urgent because the child is so impressionable and, you know, whatever's in the genes can be activated so readily. And if something is activated in the genes of a child, to be there to support them being able to process it rather than get lost in it, rather than turning it into a perceptual construct of the moment, to be with them, to keep opening the space and to keep moving through it so that the energy can be processed and they can be freed of it.
Boy, you do see that a lot with the refugee children. They've been through a lot, and it's not even sometimes within their own families, but they come. One little boy was very, very traumatized when he first got to us, and he gradually got used to us and was opening up. Then his mother took him to Afghanistan to visit some months ago, and he came back and he had regressed back to this terrified little kid again. I don't know what he saw over there. Anyway, he's beginning to come back to us again, but they are so vulnerable.
Oh, just, it's huge. It's huge. And so vulnerable and so prone to misinterpretation based on what an event resonates out of their genes, out of their generational history.
Yeah, and that makes it so powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
It isn't just them, yeah.
So important to be the space. So I hold the space for that young man to open and... Have you talked to him about canceling goals yet?
He's 3, and he's not talking yet.
Ah, okay.
Which is interesting. He's a tiny, tiny fellow. He just hangs onto his mother's skirt and hides, and peeks out at us, and I guess, you know, he's coming around. He's beginning to play with cars and leave his mother for periods of time to sit at a little table where he can play with Play-Doh and do little projects. But he's too small yet.
Sure, I understand. Although, you know, Ari is three, and one of the things we're able to explain to her is, so notice that you want something and you're not getting it, so I see you're being in a state of upset. And, you know, stop and look at all the wonderful things that are possible here, and this one thing, because you've got a goal, you're creating trauma around it, and you could let go of that goal, and you could focus on something different. You could cancel that goal and have something different. So, there, you know, it's a slow process. You know, a conversation I've had many times with her, and, you know, she's developing the brain cells. I look forward to the day she turns and says, I'm upset about that, or Papa, but you know what? I'm going to cancel that goal. I look forward to the day she turns to me and says that.
Yeah.
Well,
she's amazing. She's fully in her language. That's wonderful that she's talking so much. That's great.
I am always just, you know, her use of words. I mean, three times a day, Jeannie or I will turn to the other and say, what child of three knows the meaning of that word? You know, like, whoa. And I think her, you know, having sign language, and that might be something you could work with this little guy with, his sign language, because when, you know, the verbal part of the brain isn't developed yet, the communication can still be there just doing simple sign language. I think that was a really important part of, has been, of her development, and that the reason she's at the place where she is at three. And, you know, Amazon has a little set of cards. You can order flashcards with the signs on it. Everyone, you know, we've got a set of those, and every once in a while, Aria will go over and say, let's do some sign language, and pull them out and learn a couple more cards and review some of the old cards. So it's pretty cool.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. I'll ask the head of the little department we have. We have a woman who sets up the programming. She's wonderful. She's an artist and has all these projects going. I must have saved 100 toilet paper rolls, Michael. These wonderful little toilet paper rolls from this
Who's
a Crap company. They're very sturdy, white inside and gray outside and sturdy. So they're making all sorts of little people out of them over there. But I'll ask I'll ask her about flashcards. That's a great idea because it's universal, isn't it? Or is it, I suppose it's English
based. Yeah, it's absolutely universal.
It.
You can be, no. It, you know, the sign for house is the same if you're in China or you're in America or wherever it is. It's, you know, every word.
Fantastic.
The sign is the same. So, I mean, literally when you know sign language, you can go anywhere in the world and speak sign language.
Is this a special kind of flashcards?
Oh, it's just I'll send you a link. We bought them on Amazon.
I'd love
for sure
to
with
see
Amazon.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. All right. Well, thank you, Michael. Good session.
Awesome. Appreciate you a lot.
Thanks. Appreciate you a lot, too, you guys.
All right. You have a blessed one.
Thanks.
Alrighty, bye-bye. Well, Miss Jeannie, we've got about 10 minutes left. We haven't even read
the book
yet.
There's no other hand up. No, go for the book. No hands are up right now.
Okay. I will do it. Just give me one second here. Okay. So why is this happening to me again and what you can do about it? We are still on the chapter with the has-been. looking at the mind holding everything that it holds from the past. And we've just gone through the key thought that when I lay claim to the quote-unquote evil in ourselves, by the way, the word evil relates in Aramaic to the word sin, and sin, if you remember, is an archery term. When you fire at the target and you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper would yell sin. If you miss the target altogether, the scorekeeper would yell evil. It's just, you know, when we're off target totally, then that's when the word evil is used. But when we lay claim to those energies that are so far off the mark in ourselves, those energies can be forgiven. We then no longer need fear. It's occurring outside of our control. In other words, as creators, if there's a particular energy that we hold, we will tend to create with that energy. If it's off the mark, then we're going to draw situations and circumstances that will be off the mark. When I can hold that energy, when I can access that energy in myself and throw it away, it's no longer there to be a resonating influence that draws experiences to me. And so in essence, what we're suggesting here, talking about the has-been, waking from the has-been, it's literally waking up from becoming conscious and aware beyond everything that's happened in the past. And Richard's been, you know, is acknowledging that, you know, how he would tend to get lost. And in particular, he had gotten stuck in this idea of being stupid. And that as he processed it, he went into overwhelm and confusion. And so breathing allows the overwhelm and confusion to pass, and he can, instead of being lost in those feelings, the traumas, the pain of that thought disorder and feeling powerless over it, there's the ability to breathe and just stay conscious, process through it. And he's starting to build the brain cells for, oh, that's actually possible. And so I acknowledge the work that he's done. Nice work. Yes, it is a process, and I think you just work through one of your demons, or what are sometimes called the Dragons and Klingons. Richard, you're grasping this information quickly, and I'm glad you notice it doesn't have to be heavy. It can be fun. It is the process of building the brain cells. It takes time to understand this information. And as you do this work and you review these ideas, you'll grasp new levels of meaning. Your understanding and insight deepens as you do that. Your natural brilliance, the brilliance that we were all created with, will shine through. Be patient with your learning process. And, you know, sometimes because we've been habitually by our power person given messages of being less than or not as good as or what have you, there can be a tendency to get stuck in that process. And even if someone outside of you gives you true information about yourself that conflicts with the power person message, people can stay stuck in the power person message. And this is a good place to be able to, you know, to count on those outside of you to tell you the truth. And when it conflicts with self-limiting beliefs, to let go of the self-limiting beliefs. And they go, oh yeah, well, I always believed that that lower thought was true about me. And you're telling me that's really not accurate. Oh, okay. I tell you what, I'm going to trust you on that and to let go of the internal dialogue that says that it can't possibly be true. So each of us has this brilliance within, and it is a learning process. Let's look again at the way the mind works. All output must conform to whatever realities have been built into brain cells. Each reality the mind generates must match the pattern of what is in the has-been, in the mind's belief system. And, you know, and sometimes you just have to get bigger than your belief systems. The mind formulates its output according to the content of brain cells. The secrets are not hidden in the mind, but they're hidden by the mind. It is the mind that sees, and it only sees images it generates. It only generates images for which it has brain cells and meaning. What's possible when we get past the insane, the loveless meanings that we've been trained into believing, Michael? Well, Richard, who knows? But from the records of spiritual giants of the past, things are going to be very different. Perhaps there's, quote-unquote, a Garden of Eden available. But we don't let it enter. Have you ever watched how a child keeps coming back with love? Perhaps we did not get kicked out of the Garden of Eden, but gave up our natural created condition, love, seeing the world of our cultural training, and acting as though the insanities contained in the has-been were true. So we're here to invite everyone to let loose of everything based in hostility or fear in the mind, period. Every thought, every feeling, every mind structure based in hostility or fear is there because it's in the has-been, and it's time to just let go of it. How different could life be if we were freed from the past, from the has-been? If we came with fresh, excited, just like the exuberant child, fresh, excited aliveness to every event. You know, how often does a child have to be kicked to learn to hate and fear? And all of those energetic patterns can be forgiven, can be removed. And that's what we're here to do, to remove them. And we're down to just the last couple of minutes, so I'm going to say thank you for joining us. And we'll see those who are in the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing process on Wednesday night at 7 for that two-hour closure session. And if you're interested in participating in that, or we've got a codependence,
we changed it to
communication self-study. Oh, pardon me, that's right, Tuesday night at 7. Thank you, Jeannie. Yeah, we did shift that to Tuesday night. So we'll look forward to seeing you then. In the meantime, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.